You are listening to the Pencil and Paper Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome back to Super Mega Crash Beyond. I am your host, Stephen White. With me, as always, is my co-host, Lacia Finley.
Happy Monday.
So I asked you a question last night, and I wanted to reiterate it here because I just wanted to talk about it briefly. We're not going to go into great big detail about it, but I got to watch Oppenheimer last night. They finally dropped on Peacock. And
oh, is that what it was on?
Yeah. Okay. And you, your response to me asking, have you watched Oppenheimer? Was like, oh my God, no.
Yeah, that was why I was like, my God, no, is how it sounded in my head. Like, ha, you're hilarious.
And I knew, I knew in my head, I was like, this is a ridiculous question, but maybe there's a chance.
It's every once in a while I'll surprise people. Yeah. You never know. Yeah.
I didn't want to make assumptions on what you're going to watch. That might have been something that you were maybe keen on checking out.
I've heard great things.
You said no. And I understand why.
No, I think my next question was, you're not asking me to watch that now, are you?
And yeah, that was another thing. I wasn't going to ask you to watch it for this show. Now, if there's anybody else who would like to talk about it, we can. But no, with you, I understand the 3-hour runtime thing. It can be a little much, so it's understandable.
Daunting. Yeah.
But the reason I'm bringing it up would be because of that 3-hour runtime. Because within the first hour, okay. Now I will say this: understand, I was enthralled. I was in it. I was watching. But within at least the first hour, I felt like I had been sitting there for at least two.
See? Because, that's a problem.
And I don't mean this in a bad way. I just felt like I consumed so much information in 1 hour that I had felt like I had seen much more of the movie than I had. And I was like, my God, and there's still 2 more hours. What? Jesus Christ. But again, I was not upset about it in a way. It was just like, And I got a little concerned, at least being at the first hour.
Yeah, like, I would be too, because I'm like, oh my God, there's still 2/3 of this left.
Yeah, and I felt like I had seen a lot already. Like, so much had happened within that short period that it made me wonder. It's like, what more can we do? And how much, like, is there going to be a lag? Am I just projecting? I don't know. It's just how it felt to me in that moment. But I will say that, no, I did watch the movie. Now, we did take breaks. Would have moments where we just needed a breather. I didn't want to miss something, so I'd pause and I'd go to the bathroom or whatever. So, yeah, you know, take your breaks if you need to. You don't have to sit there the whole time.
Maybe like a 2-night event or a 3-night event.
If need be.
After that hour, if I'm feeling like, oh, my God, then I'm like, we're going to put a pin in this.
Yeah.
Come back later.
It's filled with so many familiar faces. That was the surprising thing. It's almost like you had every actor in Hollywood.
They want to work for him, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, they, it genuinely felt like that was the case. Like, all these actors that you see, even if they were a little bit parts.
Well, DiCaprio's a given, I think, in today's day and age now with what's-his-name directing. I can see his face.
Oh, for Scorsese? Some reason. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I feel like those are just, that's a given.
Sure.
He's been in so many of his films now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a bad thing.
Like, yeah. I don't know if I would say Christopher Nolan has a stable of actors that he goes to, but I will say you did see some actors from other movies of his that you'd be like, oh yeah, of course he'd be here, and oh, of course he'd be here.
Oh, okay, yeah, I see what you mean.
That kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't
like any time you see Tim Burton, you know his wife's there. Like that's just
thing. So and they were still welcome actors. I like seeing, even if it was just like, ooh, I know that guy, and then he just disappears, and I never see him again. We actually had a moment, and it drove me mad. Like I had to pause the movie. He like the I can't remember the scene or who the characters were exactly in the scenes, but he walks in, he talks to this guy at a university. I think it was a university or something. And I recognized the guy. I looked at him and I was like, who is that? And I kept staring at him. And at first I thought maybe I was just mistaking him for someone else. And then he did a smile or did a face. And I was like, I know him. I know him. And I just stared at him, paused the movie and stared. And I was like, who the fuck is this man?
I'm like, I'm going to think of it on my own. Damn it. I'm not.
Yeah. And then eventually Katrina's just like, who is he? What is he? And I was like, I don't know, but I know him. And she was like, well, yeah, I know him too. And then she pulls up a picture and he was playing Frasier's son on the reboot of Frasier. And that's why he looked so familiar because we'd seen him recently.
Sure.
And I was like, oh my God, of course, that's the guy.
But not in something so big that it just automatically triggered why you knew the person.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was just enough. And he was only, like I said, brief scene, maybe 2 minutes out of the movie and you never saw him again. But in just that moment, I was like, I know you. So,
those moments happen a lot to me when I'm watching shows, and then sometimes I can never piece it together. It's like I have to, well, but I guess IMDb, let's go see who it was, you know.
But
yeah,
overall, I really liked how they told the movie. I liked how they went about it. It felt like at first trying, because, you know, Nolan does some of those oddball kind of editing tricks, but it's clever how he did it in here where when they would start describing the chain reactions of all the science behind the bombs or whatever they're trying to solve, they would kind of show you that in motion, like in between exposition of what they're talking about. And I was just like, hey, that's pretty good. You know, that was kind of neat. And then, of course, by the end of it, and I know this country has not gotten any better, but it was, I got so fucking mad at these depositions that they were recreating and knowing full well that how they treat people back then is no different than what they do today, where they just try to put words in your mouth and make you say certain things. There was even a whole scenario where this senator was asking a question a certain way, and the person they were asking the question to was like, well, why don't you ask the question you really want to ask? Because you're not asking, you're just dancing around it and you're trying to make me say something you don't want me to say. So why don't you ask the question you want to ask? And he's like, well, I am. And I was like, no, you're not. No, you're not.
Politicians don't know how to ask questions directly. It's like you forget that logic as soon as you're elected.
And it was very much the way they would pose a lot of these questions. There was even this one, and this one just made me so fucking mad because it had no bearing on whatever was being told at that point in time, okay? Mm-hmm. Matt Damon's character was like a head general, or I don't think he was a general. He was high up in the military, and he was one of the people responsible for getting Oppenheimer on the project. And when they were doing the depositions, he came in, and at one point, he finally got him clearance to do the work that he needed to do within the military. So once all this he's a communist bullshit starts, because you know that was the whole point of this whole deposition, they asked, like, the one senator that kept just dicking around the point and kept trying to manipulate questions, he said, here are the guidelines today. If you were to have to clear him today with these guidelines, would you do it? And it was like, so what does today's guidelines have anything to do with the bearing on what happened beforehand?
Because that wasn't the guidelines we were using.
Exactly. But so he had to admit, he said, based on these guidelines, no, I would not clear him. But, and then he went to his defense. He's like, but at the time in which he was cleared, he fit the criteria. Mm-hmm. He was a trusted member. I trusted him, and I would, you know, I wouldn't change a thing. And they're just like, okay. But it didn't matter because he'd already said he wouldn't clear him with the new rules. So they were already setting their way. And it was like, fuck that. That is manipulative bullshit.
They're just guiding
bullshit.
You to whatever they were going to do in the first place.
Right.
Yeah.
So it just, shit like that made me mad when I watched it. I was like, you Oh, damn you.
And see, in today's day and age, they're worse because now it's all just about that sound bite.
Yeah.
So nothing ever really gets solved anymore so long as they get that sound bite in the mail. See, I told you I was going hard on blah, blah, blah. You know.
So if, you know, I understand 3 hours could be a commitment, but if you get a chance, you know, you want to break it up in little pieces.
I would have to, I think. I would have to break it up into like a 3-night event for myself or something, especially if the first hour feels like 2.
It did to me. And, you know, other people might
disagree. Well, if it felt like that to you, it might feel like 3 to me. Because, like, I've lost patience the older I get. I need people to get to the point a lot quicker these days.
But again, like I said, I don't feel like I was ever not engaged with the film. It just, like I said, it felt like there was just so much in that first hour you were trying to compartmentalize in his life. And... Mm-hmm. Nolan being Nolan, not telling a movie directly in timeline, you're bouncing from 3 different events. So you're bouncing from his deposition when they were trying to classify him as a communist to Louis Strauss, who is Robert Downey Jr.'s character, and him trying to be the call it. It's like he's being brought up for the nomination for a new role in the government. So they have to do the hearings and whatnot.
A promotion?
Kind of like what they do with the Supreme Court. When someone's being nominated or come up for a nomination something, they have to go through the hearings. They have to ask some questions and whatnot.
Sure.
And then they
vote. To make sure it's bipartisan.
Right. So you're doing that. And then you're also flashing back to him going through, or Oppenheimer actually coming up with the theories and everything and how the atom bomb was created. So you got 3 different things kind of converging to one point in the movie, and it can get a little disorienting, but it all comes together. Like, I didn't feel like I missed something. It was just a lot at a time. That's all.
Yeah, sure.
So, solid movie though. If you if you want to give it a go.
If people like that, you know, cinephiles out there, I'm sure will love it. They like nothing more than to just sit down all day and watch movies, and good for y'all.
Sure.
Good for you. Good for you.
I feel like there was another one that I watched not that long ago that was also kind of in the upper echelons of... Oh, Elvis. Elvis.
Oh, yeah. That was the reason why I didn't watch that either. I was just like, no. I don't care enough about his life to want to sit there for that long.
Yeah, we debated on it for a minute. I mean, for quite a while, because it had been on HBO Max for some time, and I don't know what it was.
My husband watched it, so I guess it was something.
Yeah. I would probably say our Full House viewings, where Jesse's all about Elvis all the time, talking about Elvis. Yeah. And he was on our mind, and we're like, should we watch it? And then he's like, yeah, all right, we'll watch it. And
isn't that like 3.5 though?
Was it? I think it was like a little under 3 hours. I think it was like 2 hours and 40 minutes. So it's getting there.
Okay.
And I think when I looked at it, I was like, but
once we get over 2, I side eye it for myself personally. I'm like, how much over 2 and how bad do I want to see it? You know?
Yeah. But I bet we bit the bullet, and I would say that was a solid movie too. Like, I felt like they told his story.
I heard that Austin guy did a pretty good job. Isn't that his name? Austin something or other?
Austin Butler. Yeah. He was pretty solid. And I'll even give Tom Hanks credit. He really committed to that role to the point where, you know, sometimes when you get actors and they're in makeup and all that, and you just, you still see them and you're just like, yeah, that guy. There's that actor.
Like they've gotten too big for any of the roles they do anymore. Yeah.
This was one of those times I felt like he kind of melted into the role well enough that you forget.
Oh,
he was Tom Hanks. And
good.
I don't know. I was really impressed with it, too. Like, I shouldn't have been, because I think Baz Luhrmann is a good director. I think he does great stuff. But, again, you don't
He's
know.
Got a different style.
Sure.
For sure, you know. Usually very colorful.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He loves color.
There's plenty of it. And I thought... I guess I didn't realize a lot about his life, and it kind of shined a light on a lot of it.
Yeah. And I'm sure I just know the Cliff's Notes. Cliff Notes. I think I always got that wrong. Is it Cliff's Notes or a Cliff Note?
Cliff's Notes.
I feel like someone always corrects me when I say that, and I can never remember which way was right, and I don't know how the wrong one got in my head.
Yeah.
Like some dude's note, you know? It's Cliff's Note.
Cliff's Notes. But no, I would say that was pretty solid too. And I even liked how they kind of went to the ending. Is I'm assuming it was maybe like the last performance he did in Vegas. They actually cut to actual footage. So it started with Austin Butler doing the piano and starting to sing. And then at some point they transitioned to actual footage of Elvis singing and doing that. And I don't know.
Like, how did they do late Elvis with Austin? Because he's not a big guy.
They
like that way.
I was curious about that too, because they didn't really show that much of him in late stage, but there was obviously they had to in that one scene. Sure. So a little bit of prosthetics and you know, suits and whatnot, because I was curious if they were going to touch on that portion of his life.
Yeah. Because I mean, it's pretty important though. You know, it's kind of what drew the end.
Basically, how they handled it was, here are the events that led to that, so you can understand that over time, the depression...
That it was depression, yeah.
Yeah, all that shit that he was dealing with would have led to that. And, yeah, there was just... When you kind of don't know why he got to that point, he was pretty much locked into that Vegas contract. That's why he fell into depression. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, it was
I mean, I figure you're always locked into some sort of something, especially like when I see people do in Vegas or whatever. I'm like, is this your last stop? Like, is this where people go when they're like about done? I don't know.
Well, what happened, Cliff's Notes version of it, is he was, you know, obviously he was on top of the world, biggest star. And one of the things that he was starting to get itchy about it, he was like, you know, I want to go travel. You know, I want to tour. I want to go... Everywhere.
Do like I used to as a kid,
And the colonel was just like, well, how about we just do it stateside? But he wanted to go global. Like, he wanted to go to other countries and tour, because he'd heard how big he was in these other countries. It was like, why don't
Did
we
he
just...
never, ever never. Tour internationally? Never. Oh, I don't think I do that either.
Because of the colonel. The colonel could not leave the country because he was not here legally. In fact, his name was not Colonel Tom Parker.
Sure.
Yeah. So everything about him was a lie.
Oh, shit.
And then everything that he was doing for Elvis was to benefit him. The Vegas contract, he cut a deal with the guy who owned the hotel and locked him in. He said, as long as he's here every night for 5 years or however long it was, you can have whatever you want. That was pretty much the deal. So the colonel could just... bankroll whatever, because he was up to his eyes in debt. And
that practice hasn't changed, unfortunately.
No. So he used Elvis just to get what he wanted. And
that sucks.
Yeah. All he wanted to do was tour and sing for everybody. And the beautiful part, the beautiful capper they put on it, was how they kind of positioned the story, explaining why he did, like why he continued to play every night. And Tom Hanks was kind of doing the narration throughout the story, and he pretty much laid it out as like, he did it for you. And he's talking to the audience when he's saying that. He's like, he did it for you, because that was his passion. He wanted that.
Probably
for
still
you.
Happy while performing, if that was the only moments.
And I think that's why they used that clip at the end of his final Vegas performance. So you saw, even at his lowest, he was still giving it his all.
Yeah.
Because he didn't seem like he was phoning it in. He was performing. And you're like,
well, to my understanding, like most of those like larger performers that we've seen, unfortunately, that go that route, they cared more about other people than themselves at 100%. They did it as long as what they were doing made others feel happy. They're like, then that's my purpose, even though I'm miserable and I can't attend to my own wants and needs. Yeah. Self-care is important. If that teaches you anything, don't become a selfish a-hole, but you've really got to take care of yourself and treat yourself well for you to feel really good about the other stuff you're passionate about as well.
And it
sucks we have to learn that way, though.
And I don't think they were trying to disparage any of his friends, but I feel like they made that distinction as well, that they were taking advantage of the situation, getting what they wanted because the money's rolling in. Elvis is cool.
Who can
you
trust?
Yeah. But again, I don't think they made it seem like his friends were bad in that way. It's just like, well, Elvis said it's fine, you know, and he's bankrolling. He didn't care. And again, I don't think it was a malicious thing, but if he was just willing to give them whatever they wanted, they just were like, well, shit, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Elvis is saying it's
okay. And eventually you'll just get too brave to just assume that's what he's going to do every time.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah. Again, it's messed up, but
it's always a shame. Well, I even told you here recently I'd watched that one document. I can't remember the dude's name to save my life now. Yeah, but with the like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, the guy that was their manager, and their very first paycheck was like $10,000 for all of them.
Yeah, fuck that.
For all of the like tours they've did and the seed records that they recorded and yeah, and then at the end they're like all excited. It's their first time getting a paycheck as this really hot boy band, and you're like, what? All of those lavish trips he was taking you on, you were actually paying for all of the, you know, and come to find all of that out. And they got rid of him, though. Thank God.
Yeah, thank God.
The no strings attached tour, I found out like that was what it was mostly about for NSYNC. And I was like, oh,
that makes sense.
Okay. The first time they'll probably make some money, you know, like real money. I mean, if you think about all of the like practices and things and stuff that they had put in, $10,000 for all five members. Probably pennies to the dollar on the hour for all of the training and shit and stuff. Like, I made more than them. And I wasn't some hot, you know, heartthrob with a good singing voice, you know.
Right.
Anywho. Yeah. Got to be careful those people you get. It's got to be hard to trust people when you get that high up, though. Like, you just could never tell if it's because you've got the money, because you are who you are. Or if they actually like you as a human.
Yeah. It's
that's probably why most really famous people get that depressed. It's like you have too many people just trying to feed off of you in your life.
Yeah, it's messed up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would have been able to handle such a thing.
I don't think I would. I would be a terrible famous person, but we've discussed that. Yeah. I'd be that person and be like, with the paparazzi, I just want to get milk.
Get away from me.
Leave me alone, you know.
Yeah,
and in the 90s, hounded, I would have been called a crazy woman.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, speaking of crazy women.
Well, that's a nice segue. Yeah.
Hey, why don't we talk about the topic for today? Mm-hmm. I thought this would be a fun one because I don't feel like I hear a lot of people talk about it. Mm-mm. And
this missed me completely when it was new.
I think it's missed a lot. And I think, honestly, it comes down to the fact that the creator has kind of left it in one little space. Like, he wrote the story he wanted to tell and he was done with it. And I think that there are some other characters and whatnot that have kind of popped in from time to time and other stuff, but the story that he told, done.
Yeah.
And I do want to clarify too that the story in which you watched is only half the story, mainly because that was the focal point of what we were going to talk about, but I might expand upon it when we get to the end, so you have a clear picture. And I'll explain all that too. But what we're talking about today is a comic series called The Mat, or Max. Excuse me. I almost said The Mask. Max. Yeah.
The Max.
Which is about a mask.
A-X-X.
Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah.
But The Max is a comic character by Sam Keith, who's... I really like his artwork. He's done a lot of interesting stuff. And... Mm-hmm. The story, when this came about, the very first time I heard about it, it was published by Image Comics, but I first heard about it through this TV show that they did on MTV.
And this was on, I was just going to say MTV, yeah, because it definitely had some commercials in the beginning where I almost texted you and was like, did you just send me a supercut of commercials? No. Because like it was just like in the for the first 10 minutes was like, here's a Beavis and Butthead commercial, here's something else, and then back to Beavis and Butthead. I'm like, this can't be what he meant for me to watch. Yeah. Right. And then finally it started. I went, okay.
It's almost like a VHS tape you pop in, you gotta get through all that.
Oh yeah, because you even had the old school like white lettering on blue background, like, you're not to distribute this, it's a $250,000 fine. And I'm like, oh, the days.
Yeah.
You know, this is back on VHS, you know.
So, like I said, I want to kind of talk about it as a whole. But again, I understand that the best that I could do to kind of give you, because the show is really what I wanted to touch on. But I do want to expound upon it for anybody who might be a little bit more curious about where the story goes from that point. Because when this series came out, I think MTV was kind of in their animation transition. You know, Beavis and Butthead had become very popular at this time. So they were looking for new animated projects to kind of bring in, kind of add to it. And if you think about it, too, this was probably, what, 94, 95, I think is when all this happened. So animation was starting to become a big deal.
And they had a big slot for that kind of stuff for a while, didn't they? Them and, of course, Comedy Central. Or was it not Comedy Central? Yeah, when they had those weird, like, Moral Oral or all of those. Was that MTV or was that?
That might have been Adult Swim.
So that would have been Cartoon Network, right? Or
Well, yeah.
Cartoon Network. My brain is not working nearly as well as normal, and it's not great then. So,
well, like I said, keep in mind, I mean, at this time, everybody was trying to do something, you know, I think.
Some edgy commercial, cartoon type thing.
Yeah, like animation. Nickelodeon had Ren and Stimpy, which feel like did kind of migrate over to MTV at some point.
I mean, it would fit the aesthetic. There.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ren and Stimpy, The Simpsons, Beavis and Butthead, all these things were starting to pop off and everybody's like, okay, animation can be, you know, more for other things.
For adults.
So it doesn't have to be for just kids, you know, because that was a stupid thing that somewhere we forgot.
Yeah.
Even though if you go back to the Looney Tunes days.
Well, it was probably some parent who got mad that, why are you putting adult topics on cartoons for my kids to watch? You're not allowed to do that, you know, because they still do that. We've got to stop what we're doing so they don't have to parent.
Yeah, for sure.
Stop having fun, adults. My kid might see it.
So MTV started some new programming block called MTV Oddities. And it was... I don't remember if there was another show outside of the Max and this other show called The Head. I never watched The Head.
Oh, no. I remembered seeing commercials for it, but I never watched it. Because sometimes it'll get too weird for my little brain where I was just like,
yeah,
this doesn't look fun.
But I think I had heard of the Max prior to this, but I didn't know anything about it. So it was intrigued me because I was like, hey, I know that guy. I've seen him in like comic magazines or whatever, and I don't know anything about it, but hell, if they're doing a series, I'll give it a watch because I was big into superheroes, so I wanted to see what this thing was all about. And luckily for me, and even for you, most of what we see here is almost shot for shot directly from the comics. Like, they just lifted it from the dialogue, from the shots, so you practically read the comic just in a visual form in the best possible ways, and I like that. You know, I'm happy that they didn't try to skirt around certain things. Now, they did obviously try to make it a little bit more palatable for television because, trigger warning for anybody who doesn't know anything about this, we're going to be talking about some pretty deep themes because that's what this story is about.
Yeah.
So be warned if, if you've got some trauma that you don't want to be brought up by certain topics. But this is pretty deep, and that was actually one of the reasons I want to talk about it, because you don't see this very often. And I had heard recently that Channing Tatum and some other guy, Roy Lee, I think, are looking to adapt this into a
film. I remember you saying that's what started this, yeah.
And I'm concerned about it.
Now that I've watched it, I could see what you were talking about.
Yeah, I'm concerned that they won't take the material seriously the way it needs to be taken, because I feel like you could do this on a very modest budget.
And I think they're starting to learn we should do that now. Stop spending billion-y dollars on movies, guys. We didn't ask you to do that.
I mean, genuinely, think about it. From before we even dive into the big story, think about it. From the most elaborate scenes in the movie that you can think of would take place in the Outback.
Sure.
But even that, you can
they would green screen it. You know that's what they do these days. They just sit in a warehouse and green screen everything.
But even for like a budget, you could make it look off. You can do little things, little digital trickery without having to go overboard.
Well, if we were able to do like Roger Rabbit and Cool World, I think we've, you know, graduated from there. We could... We could make that integration. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway. I genuinely think, especially when you're in the real world, that keep it as dark and grimy and grungy as you could possibly make it. Don't make it lavish. Don't make it seem sleek I mean, mm-hmm. make it just feel dirty. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like that's what it needs, you know?
Yeah,
so make it feel
to get that,
cheap.
The feel for what everything's going on, yeah.
Right. So let me ask you this. For as far as a general feeling about this, what did you think?
I think that I really enjoyed the concept of it. I mean, to be able to try to, like, tackle a story like that. It drug a little for me, mm-hmm. I think, you know, while I understand the scenes that they were trying to do to kind of like make you appreciate more what was happening and stuff, I felt like some of them, and again, this might just be my patience wearing thin on stuff, some of it went a little too long. You know, right. like when we were first explaining, I should have wrote her name down. The one woman with the long dark hair, her dad died
Sarah.
Warning. I guess I'm supposed to say unalive. We're not allowed to say the actual word anymore.
Sarah.
Unalived himself. No. And when they were talking with her mom, right? The first time you're like introduced to like how her mom's basically been coping with her husband having done something like this. The back and forth was perfect until I think trying to maybe too much hit the nail on the head for what was going on there. I don't know. And then it kind of reminded me of like Daria, right? Where she was just like this depressed teen. And I mean, she has every reason to be. I mean, that's rough. But then, was it even real? You know?
Yeah.
Like, I honestly started to think this was all in Julie's head. That this was her fighting multiple personalities or some sort of demons in her past. Because it was all linked to her in some way.
Right.
And she knew that eventually, like, I'm the constant in these bizarro things that just keep happening, you know? I do have a question, though. The Max? Purple man or a guy in a purple suit? Because the way they talked about it either way, she's like, a purple homeless guy. But then he'd get in a fight and it would, like, rip. And you just see white dude underneath or something. So I'm like, what? Which is it? But I understand towards the end, we're like, well, all right. But, like,
I was hoping that we would have these discussions because upon my first viewing, now, again, keep in mind, my first time watching this was as a teenager. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the concepts hadn't quite formed in my head. So I was honestly trying to figure out, it's like, what am I missing here? What little details? Because they told this in a very unique way. And again, through the style of the comic. So it worked in that regard. Maybe. Sure. Translating to television, sometimes you may be missing some details, and I wasn't 100% sure how everything was playing out because it gets deep psychologically.
It does.
I think that's where it gets a little fragmented because even as they explain it, you have to pay attention to the details to connect dots. Mm-hmm. There was even a dot that I will admit I didn't connect until very recently that told you the Max's real name in the show. And it's such a throwaway moment that you can, like, that's how I missed it. But the only reason I even picked up on it, this most recent viewing, is because I had read into the lore to see if, you know, what I missed.
What was it? Yeah.
Yeah, like in the comics. Like, was there more that I just don't know about? And then, of course, I found out that this series only adapted half the series. So
interesting they'd leave that part out, though.
Well, the only reason they did that, and I'll explain that here, is because I guess Sam Keith was still in the process of writing. So we have these, like, he didn't want to give them too much because he was still writing the story.
Sure.
So he was like, well, how about we just kind of cap it right here? So what actually happens, that is an arc within the story and caps off that arc. Then when you pick up with the characters later, like where that story ends and where the next story begins, it's like 10 years later. So this is an end to a portion of the story. Mm-hmm. So like there's nothing more in this that would have continued.
So like he was continuing on Julie's story.
Yes. Like after she left.
Right.
So
because that's how this ended, right? Yeah. Was like that she chose to leave knowing that, like, I need to be the one to leave. So all of your lives can be what it was supposed to be, you know?
Right.
Which is why I thought it was mostly just in her head. Like, this was like, or at least a metaphor for all of the demons that she was battling and her coping mechanisms throughout. Sure. Like, I started to feel like the Max was a coping mechanism. She created him somehow in her head because, like, she had several different versions of herself that we were even watching throughout. Yeah. You know, there's Julie. Then she was, what, the Tiger Queen?
The Leopard Queen.
The Leopard Queen. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the more darker version of her that you meet later on that's only sadness and, you know, yeah, like they even made the metaphor very clear. You know, she's an attractive blonde woman, you know, but then her darker version was just like this pale black haired, you know, you could see her eyes was about the only thing that made sense. And then she's coming across like her younger self. So that's why I was like, this is a woman dealing with split personalities is what I honestly thought. Or we're seeing what it's like to be in the mind of someone like that and how they're trying to navigate that.
Right. I think this is more trauma based. A lot of the shit she went through because they...
That can cause multiple personalities too, you know?
I feel like they don't... There are moments in there where they mention it, what's happened to her, but I don't feel like they go into great detail enough to... I feel like this is where the details kind of come in and you have to pay attention. Sometimes one of those... It took me repeat viewings to really get it all absorbed in. So, to my understanding is that Julie in college was raped by Mr. Gone. Assaulted and raped by him.
But wait a minute. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Because now with some other stuff I was going to ask about. Okay, oof.
So from that, when it happened, she didn't know it was him. She picked up a hitchhiker, happened to be him. Shit, just, you know, the trauma of it all causes her to create the Outback. And if you remember her as a kid, that was her thing. You know, I'm the Leopard Queen. I live in the Outback and this is what I do. I'm an invincible warrior. Can do anything else. So that trauma creates that coping mechanism.
Sure.
So I've got the Outback. Boom. Now where the Max comes in is, and you pay attention, this is another one of those details they don't explain. But if you remember, there was one of the bits is he's sitting there telling a story to the kids under the underpass. And he's talking about how he's defeating this beast and he flipped it inside out and threw it into the ocean. But then there's this big thing of Iz's coming straight for him. And before he knew it, a Buick comes out and hits him. And the kids are like, that's stupid. The Buick hit him in real life. Julie hit him with a car in real life. That's how they met. She decided, because of the trauma of it all, that she's going to just scoot him off in an alley, cover him up with, there happened to be a lampshade. I don't know if you remember seeing that flash.
No.
But the lampshade's purple, looks like the mask that he wears. Okay.
With only teeth, right? The teeth or whatever.
Yeah. It's all this stuff connects. So her hitting him reminds her of the rabbit that she found as a child.
Okay.
Therefore, now she projects the trauma from the rabbit onto the Max. And that's how they become intertwined, because she sees him like the rabbit. You know, she found the rabbit. She tried to take care of it. It died. Now she hit a guy with her car. Oh, my God, it's the rabbit all over again. I got to protect him. I got to take care of him because it's my responsibility. I did this.
Yeah. Because that was a theme with her. Like, why are you always trying to take care of all these people?
And she's a social worker. So that's one of the things. She feels like she needs to help people. And she has her own demons. She has her own. She has not practiced self-care at all.
No. Well, and I mean, it, all of it was repressed. Really, you know, because if you were talking about coping mechanism and everything like that, because that was another common theme with her just being like, I don't remember. And then when they started going back and forth in between all of her worlds, it seemed like she would still instantly forget when she came into the real world, what was just happening in her Outback and vice versa. And same with the Max.
Yeah.
Like he couldn't remember why. He just knew things were going back and forth.
Yes.
So
it's, I think what fascinates me about it, and I don't want to knock the stories by saying that it shouldn't do this. I appreciate what they're doing. I feel like the more supernatural elements, the little things that kind of stretch out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I feel like you could really ground this to more, like, lose some of the supernatural elements and just really stick with the trauma of it all. Mm-hmm. Because that, to me, becomes fascinating, that all of this has been in her head. This is because of Julie. And then you start to see all the little details in the real world that mm-hmm. then reflect to all the things in this fictional world that she's somehow connected in her head. Mm-hmm. Same with her mom. Like you said, the coping mechanisms, where did she get it? Point blank, from her mom. What did her mom do? Something shit needed to be done. She took care of it. And what does she do? She compartmentalizes everything and just doesn't let shit bother her. And I don't know how I feel about this. You can kind of give me a little how you feel about it. I feel like there were some details that they didn't quite flesh out with Mr. Gone. And I don't know if they're trying to make you sympathize with him, because I just can't see why or how you could in any way sympathize with this man.
Yeah, no.
But in some of the comics that came out after the fact, they tried to explain some of his past, like what got him screwy in the head. So it's like, apparently, I'm trying to remember, it was like he had a very troubled relationship with his aunt. She apparently sexually abused him, along with a male babysitter. And that caused a hate mechanism in his brain to hate women. And then he married a drug addict, and she killed herself and her son, or their son. Mm-hmm. That just triggers more.
Sure.
Then he gets married again, but he does that to deal with his own shit, because then he uses her as a way to abuse someone so he doesn't feel abused. He turns it around on her.
Mm-hmm. I'm in control now.
Right. Yeah. And it just becomes this thing where it's one thing after another in his life, till eventually he does get to Sarah's mom mm-hmm. and has Sarah, and he tries to be somebody, but then he starts to see these issues and he freaks out and he leaves. He's like, fuck it. I don't want to do this, because I don't want to hurt them. I just don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of leads to more and more issues, to the point where he becomes this piece of shit trying to deal with his own crap, but mm-hmm. he just does it in the worst possible way. So again, it sucks, and you can understand why someone would be that way, but serial rapist? I can't.
This is why I'm glad that we have more conversations about mental health and trauma and things these days, because when you can kind of clearly see how it was shaping the individual, and if we didn't have any conversations about how that could have been something that was broken, to be able to try to, I don't know, deal with that in a more healthy way, then perpetuating it, basically like some sort of disease that you're passing down to each family member. Who knows if you could have gotten ahead of that? Maybe he could have decided to not have kids, because you'd realize, I'm too broke. I can't do that right now. I'm not in a good enough place. So, yeah, it just keeps it going. Eventually you might hit one person who's like, I've got to have it cycle stop here with me, but I'm sure that comes with education.
Sure.
To be able to recognize it, you know.
And at this point in time, that's another issue that I'm curious how they'll tackle when it comes to this new adaptation they're talking about doing,
especially with the differences and how, because like back then I can 100% with confidence tell you we were not having those conversations. And for the most part, if you were having issues, it was suck it up. It's fine. You're going to be you're an adult. This is what happens. So you never really get taught that any of these things could be issues that you need to address to try to hopefully not balloon it out later in life. And then now you've got a bunch of us in therapy now. So good job, 90s, 80s and earlier, you know, like good job taking care of all of us. But I'm hopeful now we're, in that place.
Yeah.
A little late, but hopefully not too late, you know?
Well, I guess I'm curious, very much in that same vein, of if you're going to modernize it, which I don't know if that's their plan, like if they plan on making it take place today, mm-hmm. you have to accommodate for how she would be coping with it.
Yeah.
Because
we do have those resources now.
Right.
Because she would have been born in like the 2000s then, if you're going to do that, right? Like 2001. What was she, 20? Something?
I don't know, but yeah, I would say in her early 20s for sure.
Yeah. So that would have been a much different human.
Yeah. So do you position the story at a time where these resources were not available, or do you find a way to play with the idea with the current resources we have today?
I feel like it wouldn't play out the same. It just couldn't.
Yeah.
Because we'd be too much in the know now. Now, granted, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to understand it. I mean, that's why they call it practicing medicine, right? We're always learning. We're always something new. But it would have to. I don't think it could have that same storyline. Like,
I feel like Julie would be in therapy. She wouldn't be a social worker. She would. No. I mean, that might be her job.
Well, she'd be Gen Z.
Yeah. I mean, it might be her job to be a social worker or whatever, but I feel like she would be going to therapy coping with this stuff.
Yeah.
Or trying to understand it.
I would think so. And especially with someone who'd be perpetually online. You know what I mean? There's a whole different kind of human that would come out of that. There's no way they could be the same. I feel like if he wants to tell that story, it has to be the way it was then.
I think it could be done, but you're going to have to make some concessions somewhere.
Or you're just going to have to rewrite a lot of it.
Yeah, because even Sarah, she very much had that 90s baggy clothes goth.
Everything about life sucks. Yeah. And yeah, very much that.
And
yeah.
I'm not saying those kids don't still exist, but I don't feel like we see them as often.
And again, I could be talking out of my butt. I haven't been that age in a while. <That's> so, <true. laughs> I don't know. But I could say, I don't know. I feel like if I was born in the 2000s, I'd probably have a much different outlook now on how that stuff is. I feel like a lot of them now have a little bit of a healthier outlook because it was always there.
Yeah.
They didn't have to learn it as they went along. That's why I think we're seeing the evolution of man right now in technology. Because we don't know. We've not had this stuff before. We don't know. And some of us are not handling it well.
No.
But I feel like it's the younger generation that has a little bit better grasp of this is not a good way to set things up. This is not a good way to be socially, even though I guess they're still perpetually on Instagram making themselves feel horrible. But I don't know. I can see a difference in those of us who had to learn it as it went along and then those that were just born in it. Yeah. There is a difference. You know, we have too much of the, what life was like before, still clogging up our brain. remember how great it was? Yeah.
I think a lot of what they do in this, especially with Mr. Gone, for being just a, I don't want to say good villain, but an intriguing one at best, because he's so, how they posit the story and how everything kind of plays out, especially toward the end. I think that's probably one of my favorite things is how he tells the story of everything, especially of Julie, just understanding the little details and find out that he was Uncle Artie at one point or how she got her stories. You know, he's like, I went to Australia. I went to the Outback. It was amazing. And she just listens to it. And the story with the bunny, I know we brought it up, but
yeah,
the way they did that whole bit, it just unnerves you.
It does.
Because the scratching, the squeaking, just watching her deal with it. And that's another thing, too. I can't imagine, but again, I don't know how I would deal with it, how you would deal with it, how another child would deal with it.
I don't think anyone does until, unfortunately, it's something you're dealing with. I don't think you can speculate all you want. You have no idea how you're going to react to any situation until it's there. You just don't.
Yeah. I don't know if I would have picked up the rabbit and taken it home and sure as hell not listened to it that long. I can't imagine I would have. But for her, it just might have seemed like the right thing to do. And she was just trying to help and thought that she needed to take care of it. Very much in the vein of who she is. She felt this need to take care of
this thing. She grew up feeling the way she did, and she doesn't want anyone else to feel like that.
Right.
She wants to make sure she's not making anyone else feel like that. So probably to her own detriment, as you said, we were saying, to making sure everyone else around her was in a good spot, but not taking care of herself. She would pass herself off. Oh, well, need that, or, oh, I'm going to be fine, or you should, you know, like, that's just the way things go. And you're just like, oh, this poor woman. It's like, she genuinely is just like, it's just life, right? You know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it shouldn't be, but yeah, I guess for your world it is.
Sure. And most importantly, too, another thing that needs to be pointed out, despite the show being called The Max, or even the comic series called The Max, this is Julie's story.
Yeah.
Point blank. Mm-hmm. You know, The Max, he is important to it, but I feel like he's secondary to her. And that's not in a bad way. I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just, it's true. It's her story.
Do you think he was just like the biggest figment of her imagination? Like his story in her mind is what took front and center. And that's why he's the focal point.
I think so. I think he was meant to be, like, the way it all kind of morphed together. And I still don't know if I understand it 100%.
Sure. Yeah.
But again, if you understand the relationship between the rabbit and the Max and how they are similar enough for her brain to kind of get it mixed up and kind of combine them. And then you take her own trauma because... Mm-hmm. As we've mentioned, her projecting her fears and everything that's going on in her head onto other people, that's what she did to him. You know, she projected that visage of a rabbit being under the mask, that it started to affect him to where he's like, what is going to happen? Yeah. So he was a guy. He was a regular guy named Dave. There you go. That's the detail.
Because, at the end when you were just like, and they kept telling me, wouldn't you like to find out what life was like for you before, you know, you became the Max or whatever. And it's just like, oh, he was just living a good life, gardening and doing his thing, huh? Yeah.
Wasn't doing anything.
Some old dude living it out, finishing it up, you know?
But because of her and all that, things got jumbled. Things got mixed up.
So do you think it was like do you think in real life, he was, like, in her care, but, like, maybe against his will? But was it like a, what's that situation, you know, when you start to fall in love with your kidnapper
Stockholm
or whatever?
Syndrome.
Yeah, yeah.
That actually makes a little bit more sense to me, because if she hit him with the car and she was trying to help him, but she did kind of cover him up with trash.
Sure. Right?
Which is how he became the thing that he is, but he was still drawn to her. So I still feel like, her being there, her projecting all that, he just felt, well, I've got to protect her. I've got to be here for her because, you know, she helped me, or at least I think she did.
Yeah, saved my life. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm gonna protect her because I feel like that's what I have to do. But then as more and more of this Outback shit gets mixed up in their heads, he gets confused to the point where it's like, I don't know if I'm real.
Where does my life start and yours begin? Yeah, yeah.
And that's where it gets really existential because you're just like, whoa. Because I wasn't sure who he was, you know? Like, you start to
believe.
Until
the end, I was like, he was a figment of her imagination.
Yeah.
It was 100% what I thought about most of these people. And at the end, I still wasn't totally convinced he wasn't. That maybe this was just how her brain was like, he's good now. He went off and did this thing. Like, maybe that was just her way of buttoning up the scenarios in her head so she could end, hopefully, that trauma. Or more healthy with it or whatever. I don't know. Probably none of them are wrong guesses. I feel like it was left pretty. What do you think? You know?
I kind of agree on that because it definitely had one of those endings that you feel like, well, I guess that explains enough, but it also felt open to interpretation. But as a 15-year-old, you're just like,
as a 15-year-old, you're probably just like, oh, funny purple guy running around doing. What? Why are they in the Outback? You know, like, I don't know that I would have put any of that together. Well, you know, 15-year-old me, if it wasn't through God's lens, I probably wouldn't understand it anyway. Sure. You know, as far as school goes, I probably wasn't taught any of those situations ever even happened to people. True. You know, I was supposed to just be a lovely wife and obey my husband to keep my hair long. You know, like, okay.
Now, for everybody, if you've never seen this, and it sounds like a very dark, depressing story, it can be.
Yeah.
But there are some light moments. Not everything is doom and gloom and everything. Like,
they did watch Beavis and Butthead. Give them that. You know, that's true. They were very much in the popular culture at the time.
You get some pretty decent action scenes with the Max, whether it be in the real world or in the Outback. So you get to see him pummeling things and being, I am the Max. I will mm-hmm. save the Jungle Queen, mm-hmm. as he likes to shout yes. and just be very, very animated.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And there was even the one episode where he, well, it was the one where he was watching cartoons, Beavis and Butthead and all that. He went into a dream state and came out very, very cartoony and was being haunted by the frog that looked like Michigan J. Frog from the old Looney Tunes.
Yeah,
hello,
yeah,
my baby.
Yeah.
Hello, my honey. Yeah. Hello, my ragtime gal.
So this was him, his brain probably trying to peek back out, being like, hey, remember what you were like before?
It's like,
we used to have a life, you know.
So, I mean, there are some fun little moments in there like that. And there was even, it felt like such an odd thing in the show is when that hammerhead guy showed up. Because this was like one of these big brawler things. And he was like, you know, Mr. Gone had sent me. But you're like, well, how the fuck does that happen? Because he's dead. And
Because she made sure to end him every situation. Okay. Which is, all right. You know.
We didn't even talk about that. I think I was surprised how early that happens.
I didn't think it was real.
Yeah, because you don't know with this show because
it keeps
just
going back and forth because he still keeps showing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but it's his telepathic consciousness in the outback or whatever, and he's still influencing them. So
like he's still with her is how she's. I could still feel him here.
And that's now that right there. That's what I'm talking about. That concept, that idea. Okay, mm-hmm. It seems supernatural that he would still be in the outback or whatever, but that's the stuff I'm talking about. You remove some little elements to where it's, you think he is really in her mind, but it's only in her mind that he is
in
her
mind. It's the mark he unfortunately left so hard on her that she can still feel a little bit of him and all of the things that she's doing. Probably why she does it or why she doesn't do it is still kind of a driving factor, whether she wants it to be or not.
And that would have, I'm not, again.
That makes sense, though, considering the circumstances, you know.
And I want people to understand that. I'm not saying that this is poorly written or anything like that, but I feel like if you could have just.
It's metaphor.
Just the metaphors are just, I mean, they're right there.
Well, the fact that they even was like he was in a bag of clay, supposedly.
Yeah.
Clay is very moldable. Very, you know, you can create whatever you really want with it or destroy it before it becomes anything good. You know, like I found in that one, especially because I'm just like, you're playing God with it. Basically, I'm creating something to bring into this world that's not, you know, it's here for good.
Yeah,
it's here for good unless you destroy it before it gets to become its final form. You know, like that in and of itself. Yeah. And come from the earth. Clay is mud. I mean, if you really want to get that deep with it, I don't know if they were thinking all of that with it. I would like to think they were, but because they're smarter than I am to come up with all of this stuff, you know. But yeah, I think that was a heavy metaphor also for why is he a talking bag of clay? And why does the other one feel like this is okay? I should bring it home. Like, I'm supposed to bring this home. Like, I'm supposed to keep it with me.
I just feel like a lot of what they did, it's way ahead of its time, honestly, in terms of what they were trying to convey and say, especially for television. I mean, because it came on in the mid-90s, and this is some pretty heavy topics to really
I was just wondering if it told its story or did it just not do well and so they ended it there. I feel like it told its story.
I think they for what they did here, I feel like works. Because I said, there was a time jump after this in the comics. So she left. Then
more after that.
Okay. Yeah. So she left. A year passes. And she actually had been going to therapy finally, trying to deal with the shit. She comes back. And she's very, very pregnant. To the surprise of Sarah and Dave. And they're just like, okay. But you find out that during this time she's been gone, she's been just wandering aimlessly, going from town to town, sleeping with random men, just
so not coping well.
Not really, no. And when they come back, or when she comes back, Max is kind of having issues still. You know, he's still upset.
Well, I mean, he went through a pretty traumatic event also.
Sure. I mean, he was hit with a car.
And then, I mean, kind of been made to be some other human and treated as another type of thing for How long? We don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how many years this show is actually over a span of, you know?
That's true.
So, I mean, if I were kidnapped and held hostage and then, you know, like, I'd probably be a little traumatized also.
Mm-hmm.
And how would you feel about it? Because it was like a woman that did it too. Put yourself in a 90-year-old, like a 90s man brain. Like, how does she?
Yeah. Yeah. So as they kind of come back together, Sarah had found some tapes that Mr. Gone had recorded to help Max and Julie find their way. And apparently it discusses a whole lot of stuff. Their consciousnesses go back into the outback. They start to try to deal with everything simultaneously through both and learn everything that they need to get to the truth of everything. And then I guess this is a metaphor for coping with it, finally coming to terms with everything. Every character has moved on into another, I don't even want to say plane of existence, but it's almost like you see their lives where they should be.
Well, she said, wouldn't you want to, you know, I'm the one messing things up. So is this supposed to be their true authentic lives then now that she's left?
I'm kind of thinking, yeah, maybe, you know, in a sense, because Julie does have the child. And we, I think you see them at some point where she's got a good job. He's a good kid. He's going to school. Just everything's fine. Mr. Gone, ironically, is the principal or a teacher. Teacher or principal at the school. The Max.
How does that work?
Again, this is how the outback and the whole thing, the reality.
So
thing.
She still is dealing with it.
Think about it. No, think about it like everybody's been reborn into this new world. Think about it like that. I guess it'd be the best way to think about it. Like, reset, everybody's got a whole brand new life, no one knows anybody kind of thing. But they're all still there. So, she's a single mom, got a kid, gone as a teacher at a school. Max is the janitor at that school, so it's almost like he's there to keep an eye on Mark and gone. And I can't remember what happened to Sarah, but everyone's moved on, has better lives, if you will. But still kind of, I don't know, like there's still an attraction. They're all still drawn to the same place together.
Okay.
So, I don't know. It was very interesting how they did that. And I wish they could have come back for a second season and kind of told that stretch because that could have worked as a second season. But again, as this is, as one thing, it works too, you know, for just a single telling story. Because like you said, I feel like it does tell a story, a comprehensive story of trauma in a very unique and bizarre way, but the metaphors are very clear.
Our brains are very, very unique in how it decides to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll do it. Your brain does what it thinks it needs to do to protect you.
Yeah.
Much to our own demise sometimes. Like, you're just like, I don't want this. Well, for some reason, your brain thinks you need it. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just, I was really impressed with this back then. I'm still impressed with it to this day. I think it's a. I want more people to watch it, especially if you've. I know it might be hard for certain people to watch something like this. And again, I don't even feel like they are very blatant about it, but they also don't sugarcoat it either.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it just depends on the individual, where you're at in your life, if that's something you can take in and just keep it at that, or if it would, you know, do something to you. I don't know, you know.
And what they're saying may not be the best way to deal with things. I mean, obviously what she's doing is not healthy.
Well, I don't think they were trying to do that at all. It was just like, this is what happened in her moment, in her life. And I'm sure we've read situations of that sort of thing. I mean, I honestly think that's where like some of the multiple personalities and things can get bred from, is from trauma. It's like your different parts of you trying to move it away or whatever the case may be, you know, however that mind works, you know, it's an interesting thing. And I'm sure there's other cases as to why that comes up, but I know we've read situations of, well, trauma after that day, then now there's like seven of them in there trying to cope. And they may not even know who each other is. You know, there's like one who realizes they're all there. And maybe a couple of them that talk to each other, but there could be three or four that the other two don't even know, you know? So it's like the brain's like, well, this is how I'll do it. It's shut off. You have no idea that thing's even happening now. So you in the present are fine. You don't even know anything about that other stuff that made you like this, you know?
Yeah.
Not good for you. But not in your control, which is why we should have therapy. See, please, please, please do that. I think it's good for everybody. Even if you don't have trauma in your life, I think it's good to have somebody you can go talk to unfiltered about whatever.
About whatever, yeah.
Whatever, you know. There's probably things going on you probably don't even really want to talk about your significant other with. Not because you don't trust them with it, but like, maybe it's them.
No, yeah.
But like, you know, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes that is probably weird opening up to a stranger, especially, but you know, I don't know. I truly believe in it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think it's good for anybody to go through, even if it's just, oh, I've had a bad day. They don't care. You can talk about whatever the hell you want. It's your hour.
I mean, it's cathartic. I mean, just the few times that I went, learned a lot. You know, you start to think about how you're, because you're told how you think you are feeling by other people, and you start to believe that maybe your emotions are not valid, that you're just overreacting. That was the one that just drove me up the wall.
I was always overreacting.
Yeah, you're overreacting, or you're just angry all the time. Why don't you just stop being angry all the time? It's like, well, I would if I could, but I don't realize that I'm being angry all the time. So clearly,
it's me.
You don't know.
I'm the problem.
Yeah. So you get convinced of that because the people around you make you feel that way, not realizing that maybe there's something triggering the whole thing. You're not being angry for no reason. There's a trigger.
But again, it wasn't something we were actually trying to look into that much or having that conversation. So, yeah, I did. I thought for the longest time I was just some self-centered, rage-filled woman that could figure out why. You know? Oh, I guess I'm just a baby. I don't know how to handle things.
Well, therapy taught me. It helped me put so many things into perspective. Because just understanding what makes you think it's your fault.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was told. You know, I was always told I'm angry all the time. It's like, are you? And I'm like, well, I don't feel like I am. It's like, well, then what? Tell me something that got you angry. And then you go through the steps. And it's like, okay, well, clearly you're uncomfortable in the situation. You don't know how to get out of it. Therefore, your body's reacting with anger because it doesn't know what else to do. This is not your fault. You can't help it. This is how you're reacting.
Now, to control the reactions from it is something we need to work on. You can't control how it makes you
feel, how it triggers, how it comes
off. Yeah. And there's a lot of situations where I may not remember the situation, but I remember the feeling that sticks with you. It's like, I may not remember what all happened, but I just remember when I left, I felt this or this or this. I don't know. And you'll find out you're not, it's so common. And I think that's what helps. It's like when you finally hear a therapist be like, yeah, that's actually a common thing. And you've convinced yourself that I'm the only one that gets this mad about this stupid thing. I'm the only one who gets upset and lets this bother me for this. And then you're like, well, actually, I'm like, I'm a terrible person. Why do you think that? Because I think this, this, and this. But what do you do? Well, I don't do that. Well, then why do you think you're a bad person? Because I think it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure everyone has thought about that at some point. Like, you know. Like, that's why I thought Bill Burr was my spirit animal for the longest time. When he had that whole skit of like, have you ever just walked by and you just saw this woman eating soup and you just wanted to like shove her face in it for no reason and walk away? You know, it's like, yeah, you've probably thought something. But did you do it? No. Well, there's a difference then. You are a good person because you're not doing those things.
That's true.
I'm still not convinced. But if you say so, then fine.
Hey, yeah. No, I've had those very thoughts.
Yeah, we've all at some point. You're just like, oh my God.
I think the one thing that the therapist helped me understand about myself that I never realized what was happening. I just noticed it happened. And I mentioned it one day during a session, and it was about deep breaths that I seem to take, but I'm not doing it voluntarily. It's like an involuntary response. And I'm just like that. And I don't know where it comes from, but something will happen. I breathe and I'm out.
It's like your way to reset, maybe.
That's what he said. He's like, so whatever happened that triggered that is something that your body does not like. Like you have an adverse response to, and to deal with it, your body is taking a breath and trying to calm because it sensed something just triggered aggravation in you. So it's trying to reset you and calm you down.
And I'm sure you've heard about the vagus nerve too. And they say, like, too, with, like, breathing in a certain way can help bring all of those, like, body reactions we have to it out. Like, your heart's racing, your palms are sweating, you're nervous for whatever reason. Using those kind of techniques can bring your body back down to a more neutral spot. I always thought it was hokey crap when they're like, breathing work. And I'm like, damn it, you're right. I get what you're talking about now. It's not all hoo-hoo nonsense or whatever. No, there's science behind it. And if you actually practice it, you'll start to see where it could be beneficial in certain situations.
Yeah.
And do you know why they always say breathe? Because it's the only thing you can do now. You're not saving breath for later. You can't use breath you've had in the past. That's the only thing you could do now, which is supposed to bring you back to the present so you can stop being in all of these other places.
Yeah,
in your head.
I feel like I've heard that, yeah. But
Well, the first time it was explained to me like that, I don't know why. I was just like, it felt like some huge revelation where I was just like, why do you always want to leave me alone to breathe? You know, like, I didn't come here to breathe. I could do that on my own, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm like, okay. Because the whole point is to go, hey, come back to now. Future, you can't do anything about right yet. The past is done and is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, bring yourself to now. So breathe, people. Seriously. I'm not just saying that to say it. Like, breathe.
And if you have any of those kind of reactions, because I still feel like I'm having to explain that to people. Like,
oh,
I'm
you will forever.
Doing it for any particular reason. I can't help it. When it happens, it's a response to whatever just happened. It is a response. And sometimes I even do it and I feel like it's something so minuscule, you know, to the point where I get looks from my wife and she's just like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And it wasn't anything, but for whatever reason, whatever I was reading, whatever I looked at, it triggered it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just needed, and it's nothing. To me, it's really nothing, but for whatever reason, it got triggered. And she's like, you're okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine.
Well, apparently it's not nothing to your body. Your body remembers the feeling of something. Now, maybe your brain has tried to protect you by like, well, I'm not going to remind you why this thing triggered you. But that's what I said. Your body always remembers the feeling. Always.
Yeah.
Even if you don't remember what caused it.
And it terrifies me sometimes thinking that my brain has locked away certain things that I don't remember, because I feel like I remember my childhood pretty well. Like, I won't say it's like I remember every single day, I remember every single minute.
Sure, who does? Like, yeah, no.
But I don't remember there being anything traumatic that... But again, why would I? Because the brain's
already... If your brain's locked it away. Yeah. I mean, if you want to poke around in there and see, or if you want to just trust your brain... See, that's always the scary thing. It's like, do I want to know? Or do I want to say, thank you, so I can move on with my life now, you know?
I guess it depends on what it's doing to you physically.
Yeah, true. Yeah, like if you're able to still like move on or whatever, do that, you know? Mm-hmm. I guess if you're wanting to understand those things, then sure. But, well, you know me, I'm like, no, I'm done with feelings. We can just get rid of those altogether. I'd feel like a better person. Happy, joy. Nope, just make me a zombie. It's fine. That's not healthy. It's not? Let's talk about that some more, I guess.
Yeah. Can we talk about that?
What do you mean? I just want to exist.
The Max is it's an interesting series. It definitely stands apart from a lot of things nowadays. Even back then, I don't think there was anything this deep or this thoughtful about mental health or trauma or anything like that. And I still feel like even today, it could be... I don't want to say rewritten, because I don't want to act like this is flawed, but maybe it would be interesting to maybe explore it in a more modern setting. So perhaps
where we are having the conversation more.
Yeah. Like, what would that be like today? Would this still be an issue? Can this trauma still exist today? Surely to God it can, but
I'm sure it does.
To what degree would it get this out of control? That you're not getting your help, or perhaps maybe you're just shit. You could have those people, those parents that are just like mental, you know, therapists. Because that
what did I do to screw you up so bad that you think you need a therapist, huh? Yeah, what, you didn't have a good childhood? What, you didn't know what, I didn't raise you right? What, yeah.
Yeah. There are wrinkles you could put to it that'll still make it all relevant, I think.
Well, and I think it still would come down to economics, where you live, geography, things like that. So, I mean, if you were to, let's say, Julie now, you know, if she was living in those same areas, because it's not making it look like she had any kind of lavish anything.
No.
Would she have access still to that? Because it's still pretty gatekeeped, in my opinion. Whereas I know they've made it more accessible, but I don't even know if I should say it. But like when I was trying to find one, they want to work Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 also, guys. So if you are a Monday through Friday, 9 to 5er, hopefully you find someone willing to work on the weekends. But if not, there's already a barrier. How am I going to be able to go? I have to work. I can't take a day off of work. I have to make that money because not everybody gets paid days off. Not everybody has insurance that'll cover mental health where your copay can be $20, $25. So her story could unfortunately still end up about the same.
It's true. I didn't think about all that.
And that was what was the most frustrating thing to me, because I was just like, so all these people who work through the week, screw you for therapy. You don't get to have mental health because none of you wants to work a Saturday or Sunday. Give yourself Monday and Tuesday off. When did we decide it had to be Saturday, Sunday? Now, right, in today's day and age, you know, like there still could be barriers for that. She might be able to get more things online, but I don't really know how good all that is.
But I mean,
is.
What can you trust online? She could look at the wrong sites, the wrong therapists.
Well, everyone keeps still hawking Better Health, and I'm a little bit about that because not all of them are actually licensed therapists. Just keep that in mind. It's probably still good to have someone to talk to or and all that kind of stuff. But and I know that's not the case with all of it, but I don't think all of them have to be licensed. So,
but
which may not necessarily matter if you're wanting just like a talk group or something like that. Sometimes that's all people need is just someone to listen.
True.
But yeah, I don't know. Just kind of keep that. Do some research depending on what you're wanting it for.
Sure.
If you have something more serious that needs a deep dive and that you probably really want to try to understand about yourself, probably an online therapist won't be it. But don't. I haven't tried them all.
Sure.
Somebody could come up and be like, this saved my life, so-and-so on this place, and be like, you know what? You can find them anywhere.
Right, right.
But that is what was frustrating to me. It's just somebody who needs it, has the means, wants to, and then still having all of these other blocks that you just can't find someone to work in a time frame or past 5 or, you know, times where I would think therapy would want to be when people are available.
It
so, yeah.
It feels like it should be something 24/7 that you should be able to find, much like a doctor, you know, an actual doctor. You go to the ER, a 24/7 facility, and feel like therapists should be the same thing because not everybody has the same schedule. And maybe sometimes you have a freak out or something in the middle of the night because something happened.
Yeah. 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 You just don't know.
Yeah. That shows how well we treat, as we've said many times before, this mental health in this country is not taken care of properly.
We're definitely better.
Getting there.
But yeah, when I was looking at someone in my position, you know, like lower middle class, I wouldn't say I'm like destitute, but I'm definitely not like throwing away money or anything like that. Mm. Someone like me who actually had insurance that covered it, huge hurdle, couldn't even believe that the insurance I have through work covered it, you know. All of these things make it easy for me. $25 when I walk in the door, that's it. But I still can't find one to do it when I can be available. I don't get it. That's what I don't understand. So, hey, if you want to be a therapist, consider weekends. You might be pretty busy.
Yeah, no kidding.
Take Monday off, take Tuesday off. Who gives a crap which 2 days? But be available evenings and weekends. And yeah. I think you would just see your business thrive so much more because that's when people are more available.
It's true. Except on Sundays around here, they're all in church getting their therapy.
Well, that, okay. Well, yeah. Depending on what your therapy is, I guess. The bar, the church, I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, the Max, highly recommended. If you can, I don't know if you'd be able to find this anywhere to stream.
I don't know. Don't look on Sony. They'll just take it from you.
I would, yeah, that's true. I would recommend maybe looking on Amazon Prime, but I'm not going to swear to it. Okay. That's the only place I've ever seen it streaming. So you might have to still put down money. But that has been some time ago. I have not looked for it recently.
Sure.
So I don't know if it's still there. As far as the comics themselves, I know that there was a big compendium that came out that collected all the books into one book. I don't know if it's still available. I was looking for it recently, and it was a little hard to find. So I hate to say that you can't find it, but you might have to go on eBay and pay a little extra, which I'd rather not do, but it is what it is.
I mean, as long as they're not being stupid about it, I guess, then it's fine. Because, like, you can sell things, I think, is just fine. Like, yard sales, blah, blah, blah. Just don't be thinking it's worth five times what you actually paid for it, is all. It wasn't worth that. That's why the manufacturer didn't make it $400. They made it $20. They made the thing.
For I think it was like 30-some-odd issues collected into one book. I'd pay a decent amount of money, depending on what kind of, like, if we're not talking about a hard cut, if it's a hardcover, sure, you're going to be paying a little extra. If it's got a bonus material, I think that was one of the things called Maximized. I think it's the name of the title of the book, the Maximized. Okay. So you get everything. I don't know. The stuff is out there. You just got to dig a little bit. Hopefully it'll become more popular if the character has a resurgence in pop culture. But again, I feel like he's a very 90s character at this point in time that people have just forgotten about because there no one is talking about it. No one is pushing this. And it, again, it's not a character that has maintained a series since then. It told a story and it was done.
Well, the one thing I did want to ask before we wrap it up, because I know one of your concerns was with the movie being made, was Channing Tatum wanting to play the Max. Well, and can Channing Tatum be an individual to not show his face?
Right. Now, once you get to see him as Dave, but that is a portion of the stories, like the overall. Okay. So I don't know what they're adapting specifically. Like, are they planning on doing just like this, kind of like what we saw here, is... Are they just going to adapt that and that's one portion and then they'll focus on the other one later? Because if you do something like that, sure.
Okay.
But don't, I don't want it to be like a Spider-Man situation where every time he's in the middle of a fight, because I'm sure you remember this from the old Tobey Maguire movies, it seemed like every time he turned around, his mask is damaged and he has to take it off. It's like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Yeah.
It's like, why are we always having to take your mask off? Leave it on. You're Spider-Man. You know?
And wouldn't he be too young, Channing?
Not necessarily.
I mean, I know he's not like a spring chicken anymore. I keep forgetting that, you know, people are getting old along with me here. But I don't know. Maybe it was just because the impression I got was that Dave would be in his retirement years.
I kind of took him as maybe 40s, 50s, you know, maybe. Oh, okay. But again, we didn't really get a look at his face. We just seen him from the back. So he could just be a very burly guy, but still kind of be in his 30s.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah, maybe that was just the impression I got from him going back off and, like, looks like was kind of balding because you did get to see the back of him. Mm-hmm. And then going to, like, garden, I just felt that was a very retirement-y kind of feeling. Like, you hit an old man. Older man. Not old, but, like, an older man.
Let's see. I'm going to do a little digging, see if you...
Because, I mean, I know Channing's probably in his 40s, right?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
43. Yeah, this,
all right, so getting a better look at everything. Yeah, I would say 40s. Gotta be 40s.
Who? Channing?
No.
Or Dave?
Dave.
Okay, well then that would be right, even though Channing looks younger.
It's the look, though. The pretty boy look versus somebody who's a little bit more
You know
rough.
What, though? We've said this about other actors in the past, and I think we should never say it. We don't know what they're going to make him look like. I've heard this several times with you cast so-and-so is what? And then we all ate our words later. So this is why I'll never do that again. I'll be like, you know what? They're actors. Let them act. I will judge you on the work you produce. And that's it. So if we watch the Max, they do make them all pretty and all this kind of stuff and ruin it, then fine. But look at what's his name. We've talked about him before that played Batman. That he loses weight, gains weight, does stuff. You know? Who knows? Would Channing dare get fat? Let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. Larger. That was probably, I'm probably not allowed to say that anymore. I'm sorry, guys. Don't get mad at me.
I mean, I'll let you get okay. by with. I don't care.
I'm not shaming him. I'm just saying, would he get larger because he is Magic Mike? Just right. know. Not anymore. Or is it still going? I don't know. I thought I heard they might be making another one of some sort or whatever. And I'm like, is he going to be like the den father to the new Magic Mike? I don't know.
I think they... Well, the last one didn't seem to do very well, so I thought they were done with it. Oh, maybe it
came out already. I knew I was just shocked to see another edition of it, and I was like, really? And I don't think I even realized there was a 2 until, like, way after it had happened. I think with the Amber Heard stuff, because then I was like, oh, she was in that? Yeah, yeah. And I was like, there was a 2? You know. I watched the first one, because of course I did.
Of course.
yeah, I wanted to see, and then I was just like, well, that was kind of dumb. So I probably never wanted to pursue more, but all right. So 3 deep in the Magic Mike world, I guess.
Yeah.
Or 4. I have no idea actually now how many there were.
There's a lot of different things that
thriller? You said, yeah. Wait a minute. I typed in Magic Mike 2012 comedy thriller?
What?
I'm trying to think of what would have been a thriller. I know I've seen it, but it's been a very long time. Thriller. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't...
Because it was thrilling to watch them take their shirts off?
Sure.
I'll go with that. Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
Sure. I was like, ooh, you know.
Anyway.
Oh, God.
I don't know what it'll be like. I don't want to make judgments or assumptions. I'll just...
Right. We'll see. Let's just see.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for the best because I would really like this story and these characters to kind of have a moment to shine where people are like, oh shit, yeah, that thing.
But what if he's just the Max is Max? There's never a Dave. Because he would need to be a big dude to be Max, right? Because Max is a very big, muscular guy.
Which is why I would kind of hope that you would do, like, if you wanted to have him be the face at some point, like once he's unmasked.
Like at the end or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. But I feel like you're going to need a big presence for the Max.
Yeah.
Like if you want to do it right. Because I know, obviously, he's not of a body type and size that's really going to be that.
I mean, you can bulk up. I don't know how tall he is. But I mean, we throw Tom Cruise on boxes all the time. So I guess the height doesn't matter anymore.
And keep in mind, too, Max slouches.
Very much, yeah.
So you could probably get away with it in some aspects on how you portray him, but...
I just wonder if they're going to lean on CGI too much.
That's the other concern, because I feel like if you're going to do CGI for anything, the is for sure, I get it.
Oh, yeah.
But him, I don't feel like you need to. Maybe one of those situations where you maybe touch it up with some CG or something, like the mask itself could be something...
If you want it animated or something, yeah.
See, I wouldn't even be upset with that. They did another animated series and just expounded upon it. Wouldn't
oh, yeah, that would be fine.
A bit.
And you could do whatever you want.
Yeah, but they don't like doing that anymore. We have to, everything's got to be
fucking, I know. Even Disney's like live action everything up I've ever made. And I'm like, but why though? I guess people enjoy it. I shouldn't say anything. I see a lot of people saying that they like them. And I'm like, okay. I just felt like I'd already seen that movie.
I don't care if it's
shot a different way.
I'd say I'm in the same boat.
Yeah. All right.
I was trying to find a place where people could read this comic, and I thought I found something, and now I can't find what I'm looking for, so I'll just keep some digging. Do some digging on the internet, goddammit. It's out there somewhere. You can find it to read, and then as soon as we hear more about Channing Tatum's whatever the fuck, then we'll talk about it.
Yeah,
whenever we find out. Siblings, have you seen The Max? Do you know anything about The Max? Is this a trip down memory lane to MTV oddities, as it was?
I know.
Let us know on social media, whatever social media platform you use, we're probably there, except for some of those weirder ones that no one talks about.
Great, because we don't know them.
I don't know, Mastodon. if you want to send us an email, supermegacrash@gmail.com, support the show over on Patreon/Pencil Paper Productions, 5-star reviews on your favorite podcasting app. Tell your friends to do the same. Keep up with any and all things, pencilpaperproductions.com/supermegacrash. Links are in the show notes down below. Join us again next week, siblings. But until then, if you need therapy, go get some help.
And that's not sarcasm. Do it. Do it if you can.
And then go beyond your limits.
This has been a Pencil and Paper Podcast Network production.